You're listening to Red Nation Online.
All right, buddy, dude, just remember, you're swimming with the big boys now. You let your dad do all the talking. Remember, I'm the one that got you the deal you needed. This is business, not friendship. You gotta be strong, because you're global now, worldwide. Okay, bud?
Sunday, January 11th, it's EMB Sports, Aaron Nielsen, and I'm Ian Clark, and with the 2015 MLS Super Draft looming, we kick off the year going over all things TFC. We start from the top, looking at if and how Tim Bezbachenko and Greg Vanney can bring an improved season, where the gaps are in the roster, and spend the second half focusing on the draft, key prospects, and players we think Toronto should pick. Finally, we finish by talking about local boy Kyle Larin and what his emergence as a top pick means for Canadian soccer. All that and more in the next 45 minutes on Eastside Stand Up.
Saturday afternoon here, so I think this was, in a way, another fitting. I know we try to have like themes and kind of consistencies between episodes, and the last one we did was, of course, You Are the Prez.
Yeah.
And you were on that one, Aaron, and then because you have very good overarching ideas and initiatives that you think of for Toronto FC and the league, but then also this one, we're in the first week of the MLS Combine.
Yeah.
And Toronto obviously has these amazing three first-round draft picks, so I was like, this is another perfect one, given your background and knowledge of the NCAA,
sure.
To also discuss about that. But before we rolled into that, I did want to kind of maybe pick up where the last one left off.
Okay.
Because part of that, the timing of the last episode was Toronto FC was talking about getting Lodgerway.
Yeah.
And of course, we know that didn't happen.
Yeah.
And we don't have a president as it stands. And, you know, there's lots of rumors going out there where the one I heard this week is they're maybe even trying to convince Laiwiki to stay.
Yeah, I heard that one too. Yeah.
And then, of course, there's been a few moves in terms of coaching and whatnot. So I think, I wanted to kind of open it up on a general discussion of, you know, what we're thinking in terms of where Toronto FC's front office stands with Bezbachenko and the coaching with Bezbachenko and Vanney, as well as some of the new things that have happened, like the hiring of Robin Fraser as his assistant, and where the club is looking, at least in those regards, starting into this 2015 season. What are your thoughts on
that's a lot of information.
I know, I just gave you, I hardly took a breath there, but I was just, like I say, I'm opening it up to you, Aaron, to kind of give your general thoughts that maybe we can start pinging things back and forth on Bezbachenko and Vanney right now at the helm.
Sure.
And then what your thoughts are on Robin Fraser's hiring.
Well, again, I think it was probably a little later in the year that we met last year about this time. And we're talking about, you know, and at this point it was the hype with the faux signing, and I think it was right when Julio Cesar was about to be signed.
This is the exact podcast, actually. It would have been like January,
okay.
And all that stuff was going on, and Cesar was about to come. So there's another coincidence of this timing that we're this is a yearly thing.
So at least last year, you know, now last year there was a lot of hype, right? And so there was a lot of expectations, and soon after, part of the stuff that I do is the sort of analytics and try to figure out what players will potentially do in the league and stuff like that. And, you know, soon after, you know, in terms of the analysis, it almost showed Toronto FC as being the top or the favorite in the East, right? So I'm not willing to do that. I think it's not necessarily all doom and gloom, because I do think what Toronto FC sort of proved last year by spending money is they can be a competitive club, right? I also think, even though there's a lot of hype around them, you know, looking at history, I don't think Orlando or New York City FC are going to be as strong as some people think they're going to be, right? Because it's difficult to come into a league, you know, have 25 players together who've never played with each other and create a winning side, right? If you're going to give me some odds, I would say at least over 50% that the odds are Toronto FC will make the playoffs this upcoming season, right? And that's even with questioning if the foe's going to stay, which is probably not the case, or who his replacement's going to be. In that sense, I think it's going to be a positive. You know, there's some positive going into the new year. that being said, and you know, if anybody's read my articles, sort of my season review article and my end of the year review of Toronto FC article, you know, there's certainly issues, and I think there's still issues long term, and I do have concerns in terms of what this club wants to be, which was the key of our, which was ironic because that was the key. Even though all these great players were coming in and we thought we were going to be champions, the main statement we were trying to say is what's this team going to be 3-4 years down the road. And I still think those concerns still exist today.
Yeah, because for me, when I look at where we what we talked about last year and the hopes and where we're sitting now, you know, a ghost town. Like the takeaway from last year and the hype and the money that was spent and where we're at this year, I'm just like, where did it go? You know, it's like a person winning the lottery who you know, a few years later is now homeless, right? And that's, I know that's a bit of an exaggeration, but. You know, that's where I came away from this, being like, geez, you know, there's after all that, there's still so much to do.
Yeah.
And then you look at the guys that are sort of at the top of this club. And the other thing I kind of wanted to segue into that we, you know, was obviously a point of a lot of discussion was that meeting that they had with the press to talk about... It's about, like, analytics and measuring, and you just couldn't help but wonder, you know... Why? Yeah. It just feels like we've lost the plot. And then part of what I was saying about last year was, I mean, that's great. We created this great marketing campaign and great hype, but how far along are we really from the year before? Would we have been much further if we had got players who weren't, you know, this worth this much money, if we had stuck with Laba, for example, and things like that.
Yeah.
So that's some of the things that I've thought of going into this year, and of course of whether... Of course, whether Bezbachenko and Vanny are the guys, you know, I'm sort of two minds where it's like, as much as I like the idea of growing and sort of like developing, even in that respect, the other side of me says, you know, experience counts for something.
Yeah.
And as much as I like the things that Bezbachenko sometimes and Vanny has said, you know, theory and practice are two different things. So,
And again, I think it's, and you know, as we go into this podcast, we'll go more into detail with this. But I feel there's a hierarchy, right? And so if you're hiring a president or you're hiring a coach, even though he has a lot of responsibilities, the club still sort of dictates the future of the club, right? And my concern currently with Toronto FC is I'm questioning if these signings are the responsibility of MLSE or the guys who fit the position. So my concern is you know, I think Bezbachenko and Vanny are dispensable, right? You know, I think if they leave, they leave. If they stay, they stay. The problem is I think the guys that they'll bring in to replace them will create their own new problems and own new situation, because the team itself doesn't have its sort of long-term goal or long-term objective, right? So, you know, it's interesting with the situation regarding that sort of analytics conference and stuff like that. I agree, you know, I think it was the National Post writer who, you know, said it best, and he goes, you know, why the hell are we here, and why are you bragging when you're a losing club and make the playoffs until you start telling how good your stuff is? And to even add to that, and not, you know, being critical, but, you know, is that this sort of system is to help their academy, help look after their academy and all this kind of stuff. And part of the problem with this is two things. Number one, if you're always changing guys, an academy player takes 5-6 years to develop. And if there's four managers or four scouts during this academy player's career, they're not going to be aware of the player. But, you know, from my personal experience of talking to people semi-connected to the club or just outside the club and getting inside information, it's they're unaware of Jordan Morrell. They're unaware of Jay Chapman. They're unaware of, you know, even of guys on the academy team, right? And one of the other, I don't know his name, but one of the other changes was the coach of the academy team was also fired and they brought in someone else new there. So it's just the lack of awareness. And you know, again, that was basically the theme of my New Year's speech. But that was the fear. You assume if someone's responsible for something, they're going to be aware of it because they're going to realize the consequences negatively or positively of what comes from it.
Right.
And so I'm thinking they're looking at these things as individual issues instead of the big picture and what they're trying to do and what their goals are, right?
Yeah, and I thought out of that one, I mean, the line of... I'm not even going to go there. I'll just try to forget that ever happened.
Okay.
And,
okay.
I'll be nice to Bezvichenko and Vanny. Yeah. I'll spare them yeah. of the things that I really thought and what I was going to say about that whole spiel. But moving down, I guess, if we start from the top and work our way down and get to sort of the meat of this podcast, you know, obviously looking at this team and where we're sitting. And of course, last year at this time, we had big things to talk about.
Yeah.
And this year, we have Delgado and Finley to yeah. talk about yeah. as the big additions. And maybe a few things in terms of re-signings and, like, Break DK is sticking around.
Sure.
But I think if we compare this year to last year, it's glaringly quiet. And I'm sort of building on some things I've said. It's like, is it concerning that we haven't made a significant... Like, if I don't think Defoe's still staying, even though we... Yeah, keep yeah. hearing, oh, you know, Vanny's expecting him at training camp. Although today, I read in the Globe that Toronto's lowering yeah, the offers, yeah. right, for him. There's a bit of talking outside of both sides of your mouth,
yeah.
where you're saying you're expecting there, but all of a sudden we're lowering the value of him to get rid of him. Yeah. So, I guess now I'm opening this discussion we can have about the state of this roster
yeah.
and where some of the holes are we seeing, and then we can lead into the draft and maybe how that could address it.
Yeah, I think the case with Defoe, I think that in hindsight, you know, with Defoe, when we look at it back at it years into the future, I think what we're going to do is his deal, who he was too much for the MLS. Like, they couldn't handle... You know, they could pay the money and stuff like that, but they didn't know how to control him when he was with the team, and they didn't know how to handle the transfer market when he's going, right? And, you know, one of the things is the ridiculous story in September was, is Redknapp and QPR were coming in and trying to pay more money than Toronto FC wanted him, right? And, you know, that's just the business of soccer, right? You know, and even at the time on Twitter and stuff, I was saying, yeah, so, you know, if you're going to get that much value for a player who has limited value... You have to do those sort of deals, even though it messes up the club at the present moment for the future and what you're trying to do with the club, it can be extremely beneficial. Again, I think a lot of these moves are kind of protecting themselves, you know, saying that, well, what happens if we lose the foe? Well, we need a forward. So, you know, Finley's a guy who was available. You know, he wasn't coming back to Salt Lake. He was part of the waiver thing. You know, he consistently, you know, he is a guy who at one time was very hyped. He did go to Europe and try to play in Europe. So they're thinking, like, okay, you know, if we don't have Defoe, who can we have to fill in his shoes, kind of thing. To be honest with you, because of the CBA is still outstanding, a lot of the moves being done in the MLS this summer are those type of moves. It's like, there's a word for it, but, you know, consolidating, you know, just trying to have a club so we have a club to start the next season, not trying to think of, you know, big-term plans and stuff like that.
Do you think that's been a part of why it's been a little bit quiet so far this offseason with the CBA looming?
Yeah, I think a lot of things. I think one of the things is, in the greater MLS perspective, is a lot of, you know, I use the emperor with no clothes in terms of my PFC. But I think that's true with the MLS. I think a lot of the stuff that the MLS was hiding and not being open about, those stories are starting to become public. And because they're involved in the CBA and they don't want to give the union any sort of
leverage
or collateral or whatever, they you know, they're being very quiet about this. Where historically, you know, people were upset because GAs weren't being signed or players weren't being signed. They would come out with some wacky marketing scam to at least get the everyday MLS fan, you know, the non-deep MLS fans, the average MLS fan, to believe the MLS. Where now they're being very quiet regarding a lot of these things because they don't want to, you know, open their mouth and then have the union use this against them when they're in negotiations.
Right.
So I think we're seeing a lot of things this year that we probably not see in your typical... MLS offseason, right?
Yeah.
But again, I think the stories you are seeing are stories that certainly people like you, yourself and myself, who's very familiar with the league, are stories, right? You know, I've always existed with the MLS, you know, how they handle their business and how they do their thing. It's just now it's becoming more into public, and they're easy target because they're not going to go against or defend themselves because, again, they don't want to say too much. Right.
Yeah, and you know, the one thing we could have talked about a little bit earlier, but still makes sense in terms of any additions to Toronto FC is, of course, they have a new assistant coach.
Yeah.
And I think that's somewhat important. And for me, you know, I can't help but look at, you know, Greg Vanney's relationship, Robin Fraser's relationship together at Chivas USA, which I wouldn't exactly call a very successful team or franchise. And you hear sort of like people maybe just, you know, the way that they're looking at this, these two guys coming in. And I think it's a hard, for me, it's a bit of a hard sell. Just because, you know, you can you know, repaint it. You can, whatever you want to call it, put lipstick on a pig. I still look at it as Vanney and Fraser, and they were at Chivas USA. There's something about that that just, to me, doesn't totally sit right.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, so now they're going to have another bite at the apple. What's different?
Well, and I see it two ways. Number one, in some ways, and, you know, certainly I've talked about this in the past, is I want this to be successful, because the people who know Robin Fraser, he was a key player in the MLS at the beginning of the MLS. He actually played in the old APSL and played, you know, I remember watching him at Lamport Stadium and at Varsity Stadium in 1993 and 1995, right? So he's a good American kid, or he's Jamaican actually, but he's a good American kid, a person who went through the American system, and he's being rewarded for that. Chivas was just your average club. You know, Vanney and Fraser, you know, got their name into the mix. You know, the one thing I will say is that this is not, you know, because I criticized Toronto FC of almost being a similar type of, you know, system. This is not unfamiliar to the MLS. You know, there's a number of teams in the MLS where the ownership structure doesn't really understand soccer, so they depend on the league to help them with the recruiting of players, with the recruiting of management, with the recruiting of coaches and stuff. And again, you know, it's...
Like Toronto FC, for example?
Sure.
Let's be blunt.
Well, the unfortunate thing is the teams that are really caring about soccer and really involved in it are the most successful teams in the league.
Right.
Your LA Galaxy, your Sporting Kansas City. And Sporting Kansas City is a great example, right? Sporting Kansas City, under their old Kansas City Wizard, were part of the system, right? We're listening to the MLS, had the MLS pick all their, you know, I'm using that in quotes, but MLS pick all their players and all that kind of stuff. But when new management came in and they said, this is... Sporting KC is our own, and we're going to do what we can with Sporting KC. That's when all of these other things started to happen. And you even see it, you know, this season, the off season, you'll see it with, you know, I don't think they're 100% right, and I think there is certainly issues, but you'll see it with Vancouver and Montreal. They're trying, you know, even in this year with the CBA and it's difficult to do stuff, they're trying to create sort of identities with each of their clubs. And I think the problem with Toronto is, other than spending a lot of money, there isn't really an identity there. There really isn't something to hold on to, kind
right.
of thing.
And then, so following through on, you know, where we were just talking about in terms of the holes in this roster, and we didn't dig into it too deep, but we can expand on that because obviously we're in the weekend of the combine, and the draft is coming up next week. I think off the top, you know, my comments or my commentary would be that, you know, as the years go on, you know, the NCAA obviously has been starting to take on a different role with the league. Early on, it was where the players came from.
Yeah.
But now you're seeing this rise of academies, both independent and the team academies, and what they're using instead of, if the player can't graduate directly in the first team, they'll send them to the NCAA for 1 or 2 years.
Yeah.
Send them to a top program, finishing school, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Bring them back and they're ready to go. And I think that's an interesting development for the league. An interesting way that changes things. Now, the only problem with that, of course, is that it changes the draft. You know, the players who you would say might be the top players in the NCAA aren't available. However, even with that saying, I would say, and you touched on it there in terms of like how, you know, some of the teams don't really look into it very deeply, is that, you know, I think there's still, if you put the work in, your 53rd pick can end up being a very useful player for you.
Yeah.
And that's probably one gripe I have when people dismiss the NCAA in the draft.
Yeah.
It's that, you know, I wish I've remembered his name, but I read an article this week about how, you know, LaSalle had a keeper, went undrafted, was highly touted, and then he went in and went play for Rochester Rhinos, became their number one keeper, and won the team MVP and the goalkeeper of the year.
Yeah.
My point being that, I mean, there's so many players in the league, and you and I are very familiar with how the system works. In quotes, you know, if you're not a U.S. men's national team player, you could be really good, but you are probably going to get lost very easily, and your road to becoming a pro is in a lot of ways near impossible.
Sure.
And this is what I'm leading into is just, I guess, just like you said, awareness. knowing who the players are and not leaving it to the combine weekend.
Well, no, there's certainly a lot of truth to that. Like with this draft, per se, you know, it's interesting because this draft, there was a lot of issues coming up saying that the league wasn't paying players enough and stuff like that. The irony of that is outside of one or two players, the whole draft class is what the expected draft class was going to go into this year. And I would say that in terms of the draft class, I would say there's about 10 players who were regarded as multi-talented players, right? Like players who have multiple assets and could transition into an NFL's club maybe this season, but in the future. I would say on top of that, there's about 100 players who have one particular skill set, right? And are not complete players, but because they have these one particular skill set, you could use that skill set to help improve your club and stuff like that, right? So, you know, the interesting thing is, and this always happens with the draft, is there's a center back, and the center back's 6'2" and 200 pounds, and is great, you know, headers and all this kind of stuff. But because he has the relation with the U.S. national team, or because he won an All-American award in college, he's identified as the center back. Meanwhile, there's 20 or 30 center backs the same size as him, even bigger, who can play that particular role very well, who just never gotten, number one, they probably never got the training, so they might not be at his level yet, but potentially have the same opportunity. So in terms of a draft, you know, this is always in question because a lot of the draft for the MLS do not make it to the MLS. So even though there are players found at 50, you should pick the players who you think are going to be, you know, the must-be's early because, you know, you can't compensate for that. But that being said, is what the draft is all about is finding options. So, for example, if you have a need at goalkeeper and you have a need at center back and you realize that both will be taken earlier, but there's more center backs later on in the draft or there's more goalkeepers later on in the draft, you can make a decision based on that, saying that I don't need this name. I can grab another name who's going to fill the same role or at least give me a comparable comparison.
So let's talk about Toronto FC specifically. And this might be, now they, a lot of people say this isn't a particularly strong draft class. And of course that might have something to do with what we already identified in terms of the rise of academies. And if I'm not mistaken, the last time we had three picks in the first round was 2009, okay, where we ended up with Cronin, O'Brien White, and Stephen Fry.
Okay.
And it should be noted that at least two of those players have gone on to become MLSers. Solid MLSers.
And White, if he didn't have his injuries, would have probably been fairly quality, right? You know,
potentially, for sure. Like that's a question mark.
MLS, right?
Yeah. So we're here. We are this year with pick number 6, 9, and 11 plus ones further down the road.
Yeah.
And of course, now the discussion arises of, you know, what can those picks be? And we've seen some mock drafts come out of who Toronto FC might pick and what they're looking for. And you know, it's kind of, I guess, you know, one reason why I like having you on this podcast, Aaron, is because I'm gonna be your PR person here for a second. You know, is that I think a lot of people form their opinions from, you know, particular websites, whether it's Top Drawer Soccer or Soccer by Ibis, and they sort of maybe just amalgamate those to form their own opinions. Whereas yours is, you know, you collect your own information, you collect your own knowledge of the league and teams, and then form your analysis and opinion based on that. And that's where I think this conversation becomes interesting, because, you know, you just see almost like by default, well, Toronto sees a Canadian team, so they're going to pick a Canadian guy. You know, they're going to pick Skylar Thomas, so they're going to pick Jordan Morrell because there's an association there. And it's like, it's not always that simple, right? Like, it's not always that obvious.
Well, again, I think, you know, one of the problems with the MLS media is it's a fan-based media, right? We don't get a generalist media. So even on for MLS soccer and stuff like that, you know, one of the interesting things with people be giving mock drafts is to give an order of what teams they like, right? Because I think what they do is they work backwards. They say, how does my team get the players he wants? And then it'd be like saying opposite way. It'd be saying, you know, which is not going to happen. But it's like saying Toronto FC wants Lauren. So Orlando's going to pick this guy because even though this guy's not worth being the number one pick, for Toronto FC to get Lauren, you know, these players, you know,
this
Lauren
all has to happen.
Fall. Yeah, this has to fall, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and so I think, you know, arguably when you're talking about ML soccer, when you're talking about top drawer soccer, and again, I think some of them, you know, some of this quality and stuff like that, you're not talking, you're talking with an American bias, right? So there's American, so for example, one of the guys who just went to the draft is a guy named Connor Donovan, right? Who is a freshman, like he only played 1 year in college from North Carolina. He's actually on U.S. national team. The unfortunate thing with him, he's a GA, so that's a good thing, but he's only 19, 20 years old, so realistically, it won't be until 3 years' time until he becomes an MLS, real MLS star, an MLS player, right? But the assumption of most observations is Trompsey would not draft this guy because we want this guy in an American system so he can develop well as an American potential international player. So they don't even care about the team in that sense. They're looking at what they want for Connor Donovan, right?
Right.
So again, it's not sports. It's more
right
personal, you know, personal views and personal objectives. And stuff
right,
like
right.
That. So yeah. But now that being said, you know, because of the Canadian teams are in this weird circumstance in terms of internationals and who calls with internationals and who doesn't call with internationals, that also does have a say. And so there has been, you know, where Toronto has gone and picked, you know, Kyle Becker is a fine example of that. You know, in that draft, I thought Kyle Becker was a good player, but I thought he was more later round, first round pick. And I thought Emery Walshman, again, has some qualities, but I didn't see him as a first round pick. And Toronto picked those guys partly for publicity, but partly because they saw that these guys would fit in terms of their international, you know, how many players they could have on their team and things like that, right? Skylar Thomas is an example where even though there's a number of, you know, like Connor Donovan, there's a number of central defenders in the league, Toronto might go for Skylar Thomas just because he fits the Canadian international quota.
Right. And so let's talk about Toronto FC's wants and needs and specifically their picks and some things that we've heard. Well, maybe as things have developed, obviously we know in the last couple of weeks, Daniel Henry has left.
Yeah.
And now I think it's not a stretch to say center back is obviously an area of concern for Toronto FC. And if we're really hard, we could go front to back almost. Like if we could start between the sticks.
Yeah.
We can go in defense, we can go in the midfield, and we even go into the forwards and say, you know, there's question marks in all these areas, probably except for Michael Bradley, in terms of the quality, right? Being able to play at this level and excel.
Yeah.
So if we look at these picks, you know, what you've seen, and you know, one name that I see that's really getting thrown out there, of course, is Bono.
Yeah, which I do think will be Toronto's first pick.
Yeah, and of course that, I've had some, you know, a little bit of debate recently with regard to that and what that means. And, you know, some people, there's obviously some people think Bendik is a good number one keeper. I'm not in that group at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want to be fair. I don't want to be, you know, overly critical, but, you know, I just, you know, we've seen every keeper this club has had.
Yeah.
I sit in an area of the stadium where for 45 minutes I have really great sight lines of Bendik or the keeper, whoever, and I haven't seen anything more from him than Fry, Kosic,
sure,
Conway,
sure.
Edwards.
Sure.
I think Greg Sutton was probably one of our, probably down there, but anyway, the point being, all those guys were disposable.
Yeah.
And then I say, well, to me, like I just don't see it.
And the advantage of, if people are unaware of Bono, the advantage of Bono is he does look like a professional keeper, right? His demeanor, his size, everything does look that. The other reason why I think Toronto FC, well, personally, because I, you know, I've had communications with people connected to Toronto FC, and I mentioned Bono in conversation. You know, one of the things is that Jordan Morrell, who is this Canadian player, plays with Syracuse. Skylar Thomas, who we talked about, plays with Syracuse. Sigma has a couple of guys, Nanko, who plays, Hollis,
who
plays with Syracuse. So the notion is that if Toronto FC is doing any scouting at the NCAA level, the one team they would concentrate on is Syracuse.
Right. Right.
So that partly adds to it. As I said, I mentioned Bono. Like, I like Bono as a professional keeper. So I mentioned, oh, yeah, I like Bono. And everyone's like, oh, Bono guy's good, right? So reading between the, you know, the lines and stuff like that, you can see there's an awareness of him on their end. The other thing that people sort of need to understand about the GAs is it's not a league initiative in as much as it's a team initiative. What happens is the team tells the league, these are players we're interested in, these are players we like. And then the league goes, because the league gives them, basically pays them without knowing them, goes after them and says, can we give you this money and da-da-da-da-da. So a lot of these things are based on... The draft is it's not a hockey draft, right? It's not the MLB draft. It's more MLS. It's more...
I should disclose that because I actually was... I was told... I mean, it may be obvious knowledge to other people, but I was told it was like, you don't get a GA contract unless it's known for a fact team is going to pick you.
Yeah.
Right? So the league will sort of poll teams and say, what do you think of this guy?
Or the team will go to the league and say, this is a player... Like the league had... It used to be a huge emphasis of the league, and now it's a little part of the league, but it's not a major emphasis. But back in the day, even before the homegrown thing, is teams would give a list of players they like, almost like a CFL is kind of this thing where they're basically saying, not rights, but these are players that we're interested in and stuff like that. So if a team's in the CONCACAF Champions League and are playing a Guatemalan team and this Guatemalan player destroys them, one team in the MLS will say, well, we want that guy. So if that guy becomes available at the MLS, we're interested in that. And the same thing works with youth players, with, you know, like under 14 players, right? And it works with college players and all this thing, is that there is a awareness, you know, a semi-awareness of this, right? And based on the need of goalkeeping from other teams in the league, and based on Toronto's connection with Syracuse, you know, 1-1, I would be surprised if Toronto FC didn't go for Bono. And I think by the time they get their first pick, he will be available.
Right.
Right now, other mock drafts and stuff had Bono going way farther down. But I will emphasize that Bono to Toronto FC makes a lot of sense, right? Because one thing with the GA contract is he doesn't count against the cap and stuff like that, right? So he's basically a free player for at least the first 3 years of his career, right? So, you know, and the success of Fraud, right? You know, like, you know, he went out in a bit of a, you know, issue, and he had the injury issues and bad luck and stuff like that. But arguably, you know, if you're doing an all-time 11 with Toronto FC, he's probably your TFC goalkeeper, right?
Right.
And so there is to say something about these, these highly talented players that they are.
Right. And I mean, and my argument, of course, for potentially picking Bono or a Spencer Rishi, for example, who got some hype this weekend for some good performances in the combine, is that, my point being is that they would provide cap relief. You could, you know, and I really, truly believe at worst we get the same level of keeping.
Yeah.
Like, that's really my honest belief of what I've seen, and I'm not trying to be overly critical. I hope I'm just trying to be fair, is that, you know, I really believe, like, NCAA, they just have these attributes that I think translate well into this league.
And to be honest with you, again, not saying that I wouldn't pick Bono, but if I was in Toronto and in charge of Toronto FC's draft, I would be very deeply looking at all the other keepers, and there's about 10 keepers that are available in this draft, and seeing if I could find someone else in Bono's pick and compensate and get another keeper down the line who would do what Bono would do, right? That being said, as I said, Bono looks like a professional keeper, right? So I imagine the general Toronto FC fan base, once they see him play and once they see him in action, they're going to feel confident in him that he can do stuff. The other keepers in the draft are more questionable. You know, they're more developing, so we don't know exactly what they're going to be, right?
Yeah. And if we look at, you know, maybe I'll throw it to you, Aaron, if you want to just, you know, flex your knowledge. You know, I think maybe two areas that we could be looking at are potentially a center back, obviously, and maybe a midfielder. You know, are there, and obviously the names that people might think of off the top of the head would be a Skylar Thomas or what was it, Ponick, the Canadian? And in the midfield, you know, the name that stands out to me, of course, is Nick Beisler.
Okay.
And those are guys. And, you know, do you have any guys maybe that you've thought of that, you know, outside of the norms that have been pinging around that Toronto should maybe consider?
Well, this isn't outside necessarily the norm, but when before Bono signed the GA contract, the player who I thought would be going to Toronto FC is Stoltz. And you know...
He stood up the combine, I hear.
Huh?
He stood up the combine.
Well, part of he's having issues with how much money the league is willing to pay him and stuff like that. But, and the reason I say that is because... based on Toronto FC scouting, they go for the guys who are more of the proven, like who they have more information on. They don't do self-scouting. They do more generic-based league scouting and stuff like that. You know, to me, Stoltz is, he's Kyle Becker with confidence now. I think in college, they're basically the exact same player. The only difference is Stoltz just won the College Player of the Year. And one of the things that people forget about Becker is Becker actually had struggles in the senior season. He had a very strong junior year, and then he had struggles in the senior season. The unfortunate thing with both Stoltz and Becker is both of them, a lot of their offense was based on them taking free kicks and involved in dead ball situations, which they probably won't get those same opportunities. So for me, I've always said with Becker, for Becker to prove himself an established MLSer, he has to almost become a holding midfielder, because you're not going to expect him to be an attacking midfielder. He just doesn't have the skill set, and you're just not going to give him those opportunities to do that. But I do, you know, one of the problems with Stoltz, I do think Stoltz fits well with Bradley, and that sort of central midfield. He's a very confident on the ball midfielder and stuff like that. The problem is Toronto has a slew of central midfielders, right? You know, Chapman might be coming into Toronto. Mm. You know, the Mincella or Masila they signed just at the end of the offseason. Aprecio, they have.
Yeah.
Azario.
Manella, sorry.
Azario, you know, I think that's his main position, right? Because he hasn't proven to be an offensive threat that he probably needs to be a more attacking midfielder. But I think one of the things that certainly was an issue with Toronto FC last season was someone to give Bradley relief, especially offensive relief, right? Because Bradley instinct, you know, it's the same with Frings when Frings was in Toronto. Their instincts is to be defensive, because when they see guys around them making huge mistakes, they know that they have to come in there and save them, right?
Yeah.
So in the case of making Bradley a better player, I don't think you need to relieve him defensively. You need to relieve him offensively. So not all the pressure is on him, and he'd be willing to pass the ball to someone else to build up.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think a lot of discussion is actually the other way around, right? Like yeah. We need to find Bradley and Laba. What a pair that would be, right? And I've said that myself, where it's like if we can relieve him so he can push further up, but.
I think if you're a very smart player, your instincts is to look around you, right? You're not looking. I don't think players look at the long term. I think they look at the game situation. And the game situation is if you see, you know, Haglund or Henry struggling with the ball, bringing it out of the back, you're going to go run back there and help them, right? And so then you're expected to be, you know, at the 18-yard box to basically quarterback the offense. But you just ran 80 yards because you're back there creating a situation. Or if you see a guy, you know, like Sater's a smart forward and he's playing the offside line and Henry or your defender's not noticing that, you know, and you see that, right? You're going to run back and try to help him, and that's going to hurt your offense because it's going to transition the play and stuff like that.
Right.
So I honestly, and even last year, this is why I thought Di Rosario was going to be. If you had a true attacking midfielder with Bradley, I think they would be unstoppable in the league, because then you would have the complete interaction. And that's where, you know, we talked about this a year ago, that's where Bradley succeeded in Europe. It wasn't that he was expected to be good offensively. He was good offensively because
he had that
paired
player
with a guy who was like a, you know, a rock star offensively,
right? Yeah.
Where now people know who to close down. They know to close down an offense there. And so the Bradley, to feel he's useful, has to be a defensive asset.
Put in a good shift, I guess you could say, as renewing. You know, I think the one thing I kind of wanted to, I wasn't sure if I was going to discuss this or use this in this pod, but then I thought, yeah, you know what, why not? Because, you know, obviously, I want to talk about Kyle Larin.
Okay.
And him being the number one pick and sort of maybe what that means for, you know, Canadian soccer and Canadian development, because I think it's something quite significant.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken, he is the first sort of like Canadian born and bred NCAA player to be awarded the Generation Adidas contract.
Yeah.
I did my research.
Yeah.
I think the two other one names that people will throw at me is Teal Bunbury, who was born here, but he wasn't bred here. And then, of course, Bryce Alderson. I did my research, and I'm like, he didn't go to school. They get homegrown, generation, whatever you want to call it, but this was the first guy to do this. So this, I'm fascinated by it, to be honest. And I'm hoping it says something for Canadian soccer in that if we keep putting players out there, or maybe I should say, if Sigma keeps putting out players who are ready to develop ahead of time, that are developing the NCAA, playing at U.S. programs, and they're Generation Adidas players, the point I'm getting to is, you know, U.S. teams will want these guys, and they're going to start making a stink that they count as an international, right? There might be a version to them, but these are players that are some of the best players. They have no association to a pro team from their academy. They're available. And the league might start, or teams might be looking and saying, look, this guy's better than everyone else. You know, I want to draft him, but I don't want a slot. I don't want to use an international slot.
Oh, okay.
Right?
Okay. So it might change the... Yeah, well, no, I would say, and it was the case, right? You know, arguably, prior to Canadian teams in the MLS, MLS was still the number one option for Canadian players, right? And, you know, and you saw that, right? You know, there was a number of Canadian players in the MLS throughout the history of the MLS. Are the Canadian... It's a good question. Like, is Becker good enough to play on another MLS team? I think in many ways he is. And I think the fact that the Canadian rules exist or Canadian teams exist actually hurts him, right? Because it doesn't allow him to compete equally with everybody. You know, it's almost, not trying to get all political or anything like that, but it's almost in some ways like the native situation in Canada, right? Where if you slot them into a position, they cannot compete and be free and equal to everybody else. So that's where you would have these sort of, you know, criticisms or concerns, right?
And I can, you know what, I don't think I'm stepping out of line, letting this cat out of the bag, but Kansas City wanted Emery Welshman.
Okay, yeah.
But they couldn't justify the fact that, you know, they're like, we want him. Yeah. He fits what we do.
Yeah.
But we don't see him. They saw him as their next Dom Dwyer.
Okay.
But he's going to take up a slot.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
So it's like they couldn't justify bringing him in to do that.
Yeah.
So Canada loses out on a striker developing further because of these rules. And this is where I'm getting from. And
well, one of the great debates I have in terms of, you know, the American populace and soccer in general is this connection between the national team and the league, right? And one of the things that people need to realize is that outside of the MLS, there is no cozy relationship between the FA and the professional league. They're actually at heads to heads, right? Because the professional league is only objective, it's not to win the World Cup. Their objective is to be a successful club team. And it's the league itself that's objective is to be, to facilitate the national team and to be successful there. And so that's why in European clubs, they have rules like only three foreigners, or, you know, you have to use a youth player on your bench or something like that. Those are association things. And so, yeah, I think the interesting thing to this conversation is eventually I think it will be a league initiative, because what the league is realizing, partly because of people like myself, is that there's players around the world who are cheaper than American players, not Canadian players, who are cheaper than American players who can perform the same task. And I think eventually to keep the league American and to facilitate the national teams, they're going to have to institute more rules to make more greater restrictions. And I do assume at that point, they're going to be more lenient to the Canadian teams and to the other Caribbean countries, because they see that as a great asset to the league in general. So what I do see happening is, you know, maybe diminishing the international players, but then adding a sort of Caribbean CONCACAF player thing, right? And so I don't think they'll ever go into a point where they'll equal Canadians and American players will be equal, but I do think they'll allow more Canadian players into the system.
On that note.
Yeah.
Although,
can I say one more thing?
Go for it.
The only other point I would say is, because we talked, you know, at the beginning of this podcast, we talked about teams not having, or Toronto FC not having a long-term plan and a long-term initiative. One of the great examples, and they should be pat on the back, is Sigma FC. Because Sigma FC had goals, had objectives, and they're achieving them, right? You know, and arguably, I would rather have Sigma FC run Toronto FC right now than Toronto FC any day, right?
Yeah.
Because they're actually getting results from this.
I won't turn this into a rant, but I will simply agree and say that Sigma FC started the same time as Toronto FC.
Yeah.
If Toronto, like, you know, they set their vision,
yeah,
and they didn't falter from it, and this is what's happening.
Yeah.
And I think that should be a lesson
to Toronto
FC Academy. Yeah, that should be the lesson
point
to Toronto FC Academy, and Toronto FC.
Yeah.
That they could be turning out players who are almost pro ready.
Yeah.
or 1 or 2 years of university, and we would be have a glut of
top
talent.
Well, just to get, you know, not to kill this podcast forever, but just to give an example, if they knew Chapman was in the system, they could have bought other players around Chapman to allow Chapman or Becker to excel at the team.
Right.
Right. What they're doing now is they're actually killing their own selves because they're bringing Morrow, and Morrow's a good player, but they're bringing Morrow in. They're bringing in million central midfielders. So now these new central midfielders don't have a spot, right? So if they were really caring about long-term objectives and stuff like that, you could see it throughout the whole system. And it's
right.
just, you know, they care about tomorrow. And so that's the unfortunate thing. But
and maybe if the last thing, maybe we should, can we finish it like this? This isn't much of a challenge. You know, do you want to throw out who we think Toronto's picks might be?
Okay.
And where Kyle Lahren might go?
Okay.
You know, as much as I think he might go number one to Orlando, and I think that's probably fair, I think he might go to New York.
I do have him as the number one pick. I do. You know, the only one that is my personal pick is I think Boyd Aquino, who's a defender with UNC, is the best quality player in the draft. But again, I think he's going to fall because that's just the way the draft works. I do have Lahren number one because I think the only comparable player that they would go for is Rondon. And I think he has a lot of skills, but he's smaller and he hasn't proven himself yet. So I think Lauren's going to go number one. Just to add to the conversation, I think Toronto's going to pick Bono number six. I think if Stoltz is available in the later pick, they might actually go for him because
yeah.
I do think they see that as a connection with TFC. There is a number of central defenders in the draft. But, you know, I think Skylar Thomas, you know, like if you looked at and you analyzed Syracuse's success over the last couple of years, especially this past season, he did play a key role in that, and he's very athletic, so I think he'd be a good pick as well.
Yeah.
So I think in the end, we're going to be happy with Toronto's picks.
Yeah.
Right? You know, where I think that, you know, and last year I think they were pretty good too with Lovitz and Hagelin. So I think that's at least one thing positive to look at Toronto and say they're doing well.
Right. Okay, well, you know what? I don't differ much. Although the only player I'm obviously very curious about, Nick Pesler, is a guy that I would be interested in seeing. And my thoughts are always, I always look at those tried and true tested programs.
Yeah.
Like Notre Dame. If we pick a guy from Notre Dame, I'm not complaining. Or Maryland.
Yeah.
You know, I'm willing to roll the dice. Or Louisville. Any of those programs, I'm willing to roll the dice and see how they work out. And, you know, he throws in there. He's in that mix as well. So, you know, whatever they come out with, I think it'll be interesting. Do you plan on doing a top 25?
Yep. That should be coming out this week.
Okay.
And then,
so
we'll probably do some sort of mock draft closer to the day of the
draft. Yeah. So I think this will be coming out early in the week. So this will all be, you'll be hearing this and reading this all at the same time. And I'm interested. I'm interested to see how this week shakes out.
Yeah, no, I'm quite excited by the attention. You know, like that was, again, with a lot of my work, was to throw it out there and stuff. And I think, you know, because of, you know, and I think Red Nation Online for this, because of what we did last year, I think a lot of the work being done towards the draft this year is because of that. You know, like expectations have been sort of set higher in terms of, you know, coverage and stuff like that.
Yeah.
I think that's very good. And I think there's a lot of people doing good stuff.
Great. All right. Well, Aaron, I mean, your stuff has been coming out on a regular basis. You know, your opinions are out there on Red Nation Online, but people can get you at ENB Sports.
Yeah.
You know, you have your site. You're putting out the statistics, all that. That's where people can find you.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you can obviously find us at Red Nation Online.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'll leave it at that. Of course, I'm at Clark RNO. So anything, you know, you guys want to discuss or debate outside of this, you know, fire off emails, info@RedNationOnline, or just contact me directly on Twitter. Same thing with Aaron. We have no problems debating it. Debating it. It's pretty open, and I won't get bent out of shape if you disagree with me. So. And once the draft is over, I'm sure we'll have something else coming up down the pipe.
Certainly projecting what
preseason,
the season is
preseason, and the draft picks.
And again, I think it's very interesting that the CBA thing has kind of been kept quiet, and I think there's a lot of side things to that. Like, and again, probably for another pod, but I think there's a lot of interesting stories related to that.
Okay, great. So thanks a lot for listening, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Eastside Stand-Up is the only Toronto City-specific podcast breaking down the game right after it happens. We want you to get involved. Reach out to us on Twitter @RedNationOnline or on email at info@RedNationOnline.ca and share your thoughts on how the Reds did on the pitch today. As well, check out other podcasts on RedNationOnline.ca from the Black Hole and the Gaffer and Hooligan, giving you all the coverage you'd want on Canadian soccer. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next time.